Blog Talk Radio.
Good heavens, we're working. Good evening and welcome to... Sorry, I drank some alum.
What the hell is it? I just know they had it in cartoons. Anyway, good evening and welcome to Eerie House Oldie Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with
Dave Bigley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we're here with well, so far just ourselves, yeah.
Dave, you're from a lot of places.
I am. Well, that's what happens when you have split personalities, Dale.
Yeah, many, it must be, because, yeah, all right, yeah, there's Weirdness, Really Bad Movie, and, of course, there's Spaceship One, but there's more. There's Eerie House, there's the places you've been, the people you've seen.
Yep. Well, we've also been to Captain Zero, and we've been to Weirdness, Really Bad Show, hour-long versions of our two-hour show using public domain TV shows. We've done over 20 of those, so we've been... We've been a lot of places and done a lot of things. And yet, we've hardly been arrested for any of that.
Yet. It's early.
Yeah.
There's hope. There's always hope, Dave.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as bad press, they say.
So they say.
I don't know. Lately, people are really taking that to the nth degree.
Yeah, watch it, Dale. We're dying here, but that's okay for tonight.
That's right, because it's all about death. All about death on Old Time Radio. Got some great shows, some of the best, In Their Sanctum. Oh, I love that. We've got Suspense and The Shadow.
The very early Suspense. From its first year. So that should be John Dickinson Carr, I think, wrote that particular. He was very involved in Suspense its first year or two. And very interesting tale we'll be hearing from Suspense.
We'll have to do a John Dickinson Carr show someday. He was a pretty prolific writer. A lot of his material was used on Old Time Radio.
It was. And you know what? The thing is, old time radio kind of helped short stories give another outlet. You know, there's adapting that had to be done from it, but it would give them another outlet. You know, otherwise you just have a literary magazine or sometimes in a newspaper or something like that, or you know, a collection of things. If you were fortunate enough to have enough following that you could sell books. So it was like Literary Digest, like the Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine and Alfred Hitchcock Mystery Magazine and you know, the science fiction. But this radio gave all these great short stories another outlet. And it just the two genres, the two mediums that helped each other so tremendously. So as it was the golden age of radio, we could probably also call it the golden age of short stories as well, Dale.
You might as well. I mean, prior to that, you had a few things like your penny dreadfuls and dime novels and other, but not to the extent that you had in that period. You're dead on with that. That is a golden age of short stories, not only in literature, but in radio, magazines, pulps.
Because technically, even if we're written directly for the radio program itself, it was still a short story. You know, you were limited to a certain amount of time, a certain amount of pages, a certain amount of words to put into a 15-minute, a 30-minute, or a 60-minute program. So, you know, unless it was a direct adaptation of a movie, it was either an original story or a story from a short story.
Yep. And we got three of them. Count them three about our topic tonight, death. My favorite. Makes me hungry.
Hey, we got good old Frogs Bane and good old Bob sitting in the chat room already. And
don't you mean good old Bob?
Yeah, that's true. If it's good old Frogs Bane, it's good old Bob. You're right.
Yeah, there we go. Gotta get the whole thing in there. Yeah, like I'm some kind of grammatical expert. Indeed, I think not.
Yeah, see, you give the guy one class of Grammarly and you're cheese and crackers.
I know. I've lost my mind. I've lost my head. But it's not from a fear of death. For some reason, I've just never feared death a lot, you know. Maybe I'm in my 60s now. I ought to maybe start thinking about that. But
well, at some point, we start looking forward to it, I think.
Yeah. It depends. Let's see. My sentence has been 32 years so far. No, I'm kidding. you get my drift?
You know, they got that website supposed to tell you when you're going to die. I have not looked at that, nor do I want to. You know what I'll have to do? I have a bunch of stories that kind of involve jokes about death. From that we did a sketches for the Weirdness Really Bad. I'll have to put a few of those on audio for tomorrow night.
Well, I think Kitty wants to get going. He's tugging on my cord here. I think he wants to hear some radio.
Oh, he wants to hear some old radio. Well, wherever shall we start?
Oh, God, they're all good, Dave. I mean,
well, if we start in order of original airing, that
yeah,
would
let's
move
do
us
that.
Up to, then we have Suspense as the very first program.
Ooh. And so old Suspense, will you? Oh, and a great story. Will you make a bet with death?
Yep, that. I don't like betting to begin with. You know, betting with death, you know, either way you lose, don't you?
I don't know. Bill and Ted did some gambling with death a few times. I think the grand finale was a game of Risk, if I'm not mistaken. But
a game of Risk. Yeah, I think you're right. Yes, I believe you're right.
Something like that. But this story, now, I don't know, it sounds like a short story I've heard of before.
Well, maybe.
Is it an Edgar Allan Poe, maybe, or I don't know?
No, well, I think this is an original one from John Dickinson Carr, I think, or adaption of his. I believe.
Very good. And this being the earliest of our radio programs tonight, what do we have for our broadcast date?
How about November 10th, 1942?
Ooh. That's almost as old as us.
Almost.
Suspense. Nighttime, the hushed voice and the prowling step, the stir of nerves at the ticking of the clock, the rescue that might be too late, the crime that is almost committed, mystery and intrigue and dangerous adventures. We invite you to enjoy stories that keep you in suspense. Can a man stake his life against $25,000? Can another and cleverer man track him down like a hunter, stalking his prey and kill him within 5 hours? Can you make a bet with death and win?
For Suspense, tonight we present Will You Make a Bet with Death by John Dixon Carr.
Summer day.
There's the beach, bright colored with bathing suits. There's the boardwalk, all straw hats and summer dressing. There's the Ferris wheel and the roller coasters. There is all humanity eating hot dogs and having a good time. And over there, beyond that souvenir shop, a haunted mill. You get into a little boat. You float through a narrow tunnel into the dark while witches scream. But that fools nobody, does it? There couldn't be any real terror. Could there? While the bands are playing and the crowd goes by and...
A unique attraction. It hurts me to see you stand there and miss this. Only 10 cents, one dime, the tenth part of a dollar to go through the old haunted mill and get the thrill of your life.
An overstatement, if you ask me. One ticket, please.
Did you say one ticket, lady?
That's right, one ticket. What's the thrill?
Beg pardon, lady?
I said, what's the thrill?
Lady, the gals who come here with their boyfriends don't have to ask that. 10 cents, please, this way and mind the gate.
Thank you.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Get your ticket for the old haunted mill where ghosts will walk and pop.
Give me some tickets. Hurry.
Just a minute, young fella. I know you want to get into the old haunted mill, but there's plenty of time. How many tickets?
I don't know. You better give me 10.
10 tickets? Do you hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Here's a young fella who likes the old haunted mill so much, he buys 10 tickets.
Don't call everybody for attention. Listen, I've got a better idea. Whatever boat comes after mine,
yeah,
I'll give you an extra dollar to send that boat through empty.
Oh, what's the matter, son? The cops ain't after you, are they?
No. It's nothing like that. Will you do it?
Well, let me talk, young fella. Okay, go ahead.
Isn't there an empty boat here?
Well, really? You've got such a great objection to riding in the same boat with me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that at all. Don't misunderstand.
Then you better get in if you want to go. This boat's starting to move.
Yeah, I better sit down.
You certainly had.
Look here, I want to apologize.
That's quite unnecessary. This place is rather childish anyway, isn't it?
Yes, isn't it?
But I've seen everything else, so I may as well see this. Here we go in the dark.
What was that?
One of the ghosts, I imagine. From a machine.
It sounded like him laughing. There isn't anybody in the boat behind us, is there?
Oh, I can't see. It's pitch dark.
Listen, Miss...
My name is Andrews, Betty Andrews. If it's customary to exchange names in a place like this.
Mine's Pendrell. Bob Pendrell.
Did you say Pendrell?
Yes. Do you know it?
Oh, no, not exactly. It's an unusual name, that's all.
I don't want you to think I'm out of my mind, though I very nearly am. But I've got 5 hours to go. Just 5 hours. At the end of that time, either I'll have won $25,000 or else...
Or else?
Or else I'll be dead.
You know, I wish I'd kept you away from this boat.
So there's nothing to get alarmed about. For you. I can't tell you much, but I had to tell somebody that or I'd have started yelling. There's just one other thing.
Is there?
In these places, they've usually got little dim-lighted rooms along the way.
Yes,
exhibits
and things.
Yes. Well, when we come to one, I'm going to get out of this boat and hide there. Just don't get alarmed, and don't tell anybody when you go out.
Why should you do that?
I think I see a light ahead.
There is a light, but...
Dim, too. That's all for the good. It's... Yes? We're coming around the corner. Look, I'm going to have company when I get off. A wax dead man on a pile of straw. Oh, I hope I can stand these noises. Goodbye, Betty Andrews. I wish we'd met at a different time.
Mind the boat!
Here, what are you doing?
Getting off, too?
Don't be an idiot. What's the idea?
You need looking after, Mr. Pendrell. And if we must hide, I suppose this is as good a place as any.
I won't have it.
Quick, there'll be more boats along. Over behind that dead man on the straw. He'll hide us. Hurry. Now, Mr. Pendrell, in the queerest place I ever get into, please tell me what this is all about.
I can't tell you.
You said it yourself. If you don't tell somebody, you'll go crazy.
Maybe you're right. It's against the strict terms of the bet. But this is the last day. And I tell you, I can't hold out any longer.
Lower your voice. The boat's coming.
I wonder if you ever heard of my stepfather, John Destry.
Yes.
I imagine everybody has. He's a millionaire, and I'm not. I'm just a chemist, an analytical chemist. Not very successful. So if I'd had time, if I'd had money, I might have worked out a process that would have... Well, I think it would have helped in the war.
But he's got money.
Yes, he's got money. Well, my mother died years ago. This Destry's a big, white-haired, fine-looking fella. You'd think butter wouldn't melt in his mouth. He's got an apartment in the East 60s. Secretary. I never met her. Ballot, cook, that kind of thing. Well, he used to invite me there. I wouldn't go. Then he got hold of a book I had to have. A German work on chemicals. So I went. After dinner in that study of his, over the brandy...
My dear Robert, you're quite welcome to the book. Don't mention it. Oh, what do you think of this brandy, by the way?
It's excellent, thanks.
Yes, yes, I thought you'd like it. And now that we're all relaxed, comfortable after dinner, tell me something.
Yes, Mr. Destry?
You hate me, don't you?
Frankly, I do. And always have.
Good, good. Then you'll be relieved to hear I've always felt the same about you. But tell me something else. Did you ever know me to break my word?
No, I never did. I'll give you that.
I asked you, Robert, because I want to make a little bet with you. That is, if you have the nerve, which I doubt.
I'm afraid I can't afford to make bets.
You were always careless with money, Robert. Well, I've been thrifty. I saw that when your mother was alive. But you can afford to make this bet. Look here. In my desk.
Well?
$25,000, Robert. $25,000 in five $100 bills.
And what would I have to bet against that?
Your life. What?
My life?
There's the money in the drawer. Look at it. What wouldn't you give for that money? What wouldn't you give to have it for this precious work of yours that you're so fond of and that you've failed in... miserably.
So far I've failed, yes.
Oh, I've had a fairly good life as lives go. My heart isn't as good as it might be, but doctors say I'll last a little while yet. But before I go, there's one pleasure, one little exquisite thrill for me to experience. I want to commit a murder. Yes, I said a murder. My bet is that I can kill you within 6 months and that you can't stop me and that I'll never be punished for it. What do you say? Yes or no?
I believe you mean that.
Of course I mean it.
And just how would you propose to kill me?
Ah, that would be telling.
You know, if I had time to think this thing over...
There's no thinking it over. Now, yes or no?
Yes.
You must need the money badly, Robert.
I do need it. But oddly enough, Mr. Destry, that isn't why I'm doing this.
No?
No. I want to show you you can't play the Lord Almighty and get away with it.
Are you challenging me?
Yes.
You don't think I can do it?
I know you can't.
We mustn't get excited, Robert. There will be conditions to the bet, you understand?
What conditions?
First of all, you'll never mention this matter to anyone.
All right. That seems fair enough.
You'll remain within the city limits of New York for 6 months. You'll spend at least 1 hour of every day walking the open streets alone.
All right.
You'll spend at least 1 hour every evening in your own room alone. I may come to see you, or I may not.
Trying to scare me already, are you?
Finally, you'll write out a little note and give it to me. There's pen and paper on the desk in front of you. Write it now.
Let's hear what I have to write before I do anything like that.
You will write, I am a failure.
You can't stop harping on that, can you?
I am a failure, and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
A suicide note?
Yes. I intend to use it when I, operate.
And if I won't write it?
Then there's no bet.
All right, I'll do it.
It's now, let's see, 9 o'clock. on the night of January the 10th. If you're alive and not in a madhouse...
Does that go into the bargain, too?
Yes. At 9 o'clock on the night of June 10th, given those conditions, you will receive $25,000. Can't you hear the dice rattle, Robert? You're playing with death now.
I know it.
Aren't you going to finish your brandy?
No, thank you.
Oh, then pour it back into the decanter. You heard me. Pour it back into the decanter. If you were as careful as I am, you wouldn't be where you are now. That's right. Always be thrifty. I can promise you, by the way, that you'll always be perfectly safe as long as you're in this apartment. But that's the only concession I make. Oh, I notice your hands are steady at the moment. I wonder what they'll be like a month from now.
So you were fool enough to make a bet with John Destry.
Listen, Betty, I want to tell you what else happened the same night. I got on the Fifth Avenue bus and started to look through that book that Destry gave me. It was a book that I wanted about poisons. Well, just as I opened it, I felt something sharp prick my fingers. I looked down, and my hands were covered with blood. He had sewn safety razor blades in a line down the inside edge of the cover.
Oh, no.
A little white card fell out of the book, and I read it. It said, "See how easy it is to take you off guard? Those razor blades aren't poisoned, but they might have been. Take warning." Betty, that was 6 months ago. 6 months less 5 hours of careful, refined torture. And now, I've got only 5 hours to go.
What's he done in the meantime?
Nothing.
Nothing? I don't understand.
Nothing at all. That's the cleverness of it. He's left me waiting, waiting, waiting.
Expecting something.
Expecting it every hour of the day or night. Once at the laboratory where I work, I opened a box that I thought was from the chemical supply house. And a Mexican tarantula, one of those furry spiders about as big as your fist, ran out across my hand. It was a toy tarantula. He enclosed a card, asking whether I didn't admire it.
But this can't go on.
I used to think I didn't have a nerve in my body. I could hold the test tube at arm's length, absolutely steady, for minutes at a time. Now look at me.
Don't, please, don't.
But the waiting's almost over now. Walking the streets, wondering who's behind you. Sitting alone at night, listening for every step on the stair. He's got very little time left now, and he's got to do something. The question is, what's he going to do?
Well, maybe he doesn't mean it. Maybe he's only doing it to scare you.
And lose all that money? Oh, you don't know my stepfather.
Listen.
Huh? I don't hear anything.
That's just it. There's no sound of running water. The boats have stopped.
Then we're all by ourselves in here. Or with him.
Yes.
Oh, Lord, how I wish I hadn't gotten you into this.
Oh, I'm all right. Or at least I think I am.
I thought I saw him in the crowd outside, but I couldn't be sure. I'm seeing him everywhere.
Now, Bob, just a minute. Just tell me one more thing. Did you ever see Mr. Destry, I mean face to face, after that first night?
Oh, many times.
He came to see you?
He came to my laboratory once, yes, but mostly I went to see him. And why? Because it was the only place in the world I could feel safe.
He's promised that nothing should happen to you while you were in his apartment.
Don't you see it was part of the torture? Night after night he'd invite me, and I'd go. Right up until last night. Last night, we were in that study of his, with the devil masks on the walls. He was sitting behind the big mahogany desk.
This guy got roped into some kind of a bet, and he is having some troubles. Yeah, I know the story well, Dave.
$25,000, Dale. Of course,
who's up?
In 1942, I borrowed Gar's Garculator, and today that would be betting $420,919.35. So you're heading towards $500,000. Would you make that bet for $500,000 for half a year, Dale?
That's a nice chunk of change. I don't know. Maybe when I was young, I would be that dumb, but it's like, I can't run. I don't want to.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can't either.
My running days are over. I'm just not in a hurry for anything like that.
It's like a George Burns song, Old Bones. And the one line is, so if I have to run, I simply don't go, you know.
That's right.
I'm telling you. Yep.
Just not necessary in my little world.
Yep.
Not doing it. Thank you, no.
Yep. Interesting story going on. Yeah, and it's getting the best of it. You know, so you could go on for 6 months and him not do a thing, and that guy be ready to pull the trigger anyway, just because he's already going nuts.
He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. And who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't be?
Who?
Hoo-hoo.
Said the L. So suspense, when did they start? 41, 42?
It was 42. This is in its first year. Actually, you know, it was in the date of November. It might be within its first half a year here. Again, the first episode was put together and directed by Alfred Hitchcock. I think he was just so much into the movies he was making, he didn't want to take time out to do the radio.
Yeah. In a way, it's too bad, but again, his storytelling is one of those types that's been like every form of media possible, radio, television, Alfred Hitchcock magazine.
Yeah, and luckily he did agree to do it for television because he left such not only a wonderful archive of great stories that were left behind, but him being in the openings and closings as well. You know, it just that was just classic television.
Yeah.
Classic television.
Oh, and that was a treat having him as a host for his own show.
Yeah. It lasted for basically just about as long as he wanted anything to do with it. And technically he had approval over every script. And I sure haven't seen a bad one. And plus, anybody who was anybody wanted to be in at least one of his episodes. So
yeah. Yep, just like people wanted to be in the Twilight Zone.
Right, and
before
and
that,
exactly.
it was definitely Hitch.
Probably one of the great early television anthology series. That started what, about 55 or 56, I think.
I think it's 55. But I'd have to check. I was just looking at a bunch of them not long ago. And
I think there's a bunch
fun.
Of them on Roku. I think there's a bunch of them. The Roku channel.
That's exactly where I was exploring.
That really kind of, in some ways, mid-50s to mid-60s was kind of a golden age of television. Then silliness kind of took over for part of it. And silliness is okay, because silliness is still better than... silliness is still better than... Then what guy is going to get one woman, or what woman's going to get one guy out of 60 guys, and things like that so prevalent on television today. This is definitely not the golden age of television.
Yep.
Not to say that there aren't a good few shows, because there are, but
I just haven't seen them.
But it's just it's certainly not a golden age.
No, I think not. But you got Golden Age of Radio tonight.
We do.
As we're going to complete our story, Will You Make a Bet with Death? You are going to like the ending of this from Suspense.
My dear Robert, I'm pleased and even touched to have you here on the last night before you,
Why don't you say die and get it over with?
Oh, well, let's not say die. No, the clergy contend that we never die. We only change. Now, let that be a consolation for you. Must you be going so early?
There's that 1 hour at home rule to our bet, if you remember.
I remember. You're keeping to the rule.
Yes, and I mean to beat you at this if it's the last thing I ever do.
The last thing I ever do? That's an unfortunate choice of phrase, Robert. My boy, you haven't a chance. Something's going to happen to you within the next 24 hours when you least expect it.
Will you answer me one question?
If I choose.
Have you decided how you mean to kill me?
I decided that 6 months ago.
And you still think you can get away with it?
It's a method which has never been known to fail. I give you my word of honor on that.
Is it sudden?
Yes, and no. Wouldn't you like to know what it is?
Good night, Mr. Destry. I think I'd better be leaving.
No, my dear boy, you mustn't go yet. Sit down. Pour yourself a glass of brandy.
No, thanks.
Then perhaps you wouldn't mind pouring me a little. My doctor allows brandy, though I'm forbidden spirits. I notice your hands are shaking quite a good deal. They weren't like that 6 months ago, were they? No. You were full of confidence then.
Oh.
And it grieves me to see you waste tobacco by lighting a cigarette and putting it out immediately.
Oh, it's no use lying to you. But I'm going to beat you just the same.
You wouldn't like to back out now?
After what I've been through?
You'd still have your life.
I'll keep it, thanks.
That's very unwise of you, Robert. Still, you must decide. I was expecting my secretary a little later to dictate some letters. But now, I think I'll leave her a message that I've gone to bed and turn in myself. Tomorrow is likely to prove an interesting day for both of us. Here's your hat, here's your briefcase, and let me wish you a fond, peaceful, and happy good night.
That was last night, Betty. I saw I had 5 hours to go.
It's less than 4 hours now.
If I can keep away from the old devil until 9 o'clock.
I wish those boats would start running again.
Why?
Because it's almost as spooky in here as a real old mill.
I know.
Even that whack dummy on the straw. Any minute now.
You're expecting to see him move? So am I.
Now don't stand up.
It doesn't matter. If the boats aren't running, we can hear anybody who comes along.
I hope so.
Do you think Destry's got in?
Robert can't have got in. He can't even be here.
Why not?
Because Mr. Destry told me.
Mr. Destry told you?
I'm his secretary.
You know, Betty Andrews, I'm sorry it was you who did this.
Did what?
You can't guess, can you?
Oh, Bob, I didn't come here to trap you or spy on you. If that's what you're thinking, I swear I didn't.
No. You only got me to tell you the whole story and lose my bet.
I haven't heard a single word you said. Bob, please believe that.
He didn't send you here, of course.
No.
And of course you never saw me at his apartment last night.
No, I swear I didn't. I got there late. He'd gone to bed. I didn't even take off my hat or gloves before I left again. Don't you understand, Bob? I hate him, too. I want to see you beat him. You've got to beat him.
You mean that?
Look at me and see if I mean it.
Betty, I almost believe you.
You must believe me. And
anything else?
We better hide behind that dead man in a hurry. Those boats have started up again.
I wish I could tell you, Betty, what that means to me.
Come on, hurry.
Wait a minute, you two.
But
stay just where you are.
Where's that voice coming from?
Along the tunnel, I think.
But it's not Destry's voice.
No, it's a man standing up in the boat. He's coming around the corner. I can see him now. Hurry.
The old haunted mill, eh? My golly, if this ain't some place to make a pinch, I never heard of one.
What do you mean? Make a pinch?
Just what I said. Your name, Robert Pendrell?
Yes. Who are you and what do you want?
Police headquarters. You ought to come along with me. I want to see you over in New York.
About what?
I wouldn't know, Randy, but it might be about the murder of John Destry.
Oh, no!
Did you say the murder of John Destry?
That's right. Somebody poisoned him last night with mercury cyanide. I wouldn't have got you at all, maybe, if the barker outside there hadn't thought the cops were after you to start with.
Betty.
Yes, Bob?
He's beaten me.
He hasn't beaten you.
Oh, yes, he has. And I know now the weapon Destry was going to use in killing me.
What weapon?
It never fails. The electric chair.
You mustn't talk like that.
Don't you see? He never once intended to kill me in the way I thought.
Are you coming quietly, Mr. Pendrell?
Just a minute.
He's poisoned himself. But he's left evidence to show I did it. He's killing me the worst way possible. He's won the bet. The money doesn't matter now. If I'm in the death house for murder, what use have I got for all the money in the world?
Let me introduce myself. My name's Mullen, Inspector Mullen.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Inspector. It's a pleasure to be safe again.
I've had you brought here to my office for a little quiet talk. You're in a jam, son, and I want you to realize how bad it is.
You think I don't realize it?
John Destry was poisoned with mercury cyanide administered in a glass of brandy.
And only my fingerprints were on the glass besides his own. I can guess.
Mr. Destry's body was found this morning lying behind the desk in the study. There was an empty glass with traces of brandy and cyanide. We haven't had the full autopsy report, but the smell of that stuff is pretty distinctive. Tell me, you're a chemist, Mr. Pendrell.
That's right.
The boys find that 8 grains of mercury cyanide are missing from your laboratory.
Where he visited me a month ago.
And in your briefcase, which you took away from his apartment last night...
He handed it to me. I remember.
We found over $1,000 in cash. Now, take a look at this note. You ever see it before?
But... Yes. I wrote it.
You admit that?
Yes, yes, yes.
It says, I was a failure and this was the only way out. I wouldn't have done it otherwise.
Where did you find it?
Torn up in little bits. You started to write a confession and then you couldn't face the consequences. But you shouldn't have left the pieces behind. You're infinite, my boy. Unless...
Unless what?
Now, if you'd like to confess here and now, and maybe we did a little deal about second-degree murder,
Inspector, why bother to string me along?
What do you mean, string you along?
There's no second-degree murder on a poison charge. It's the death house and nothing. He saw to that.
It's too bad you had to go and kill him, son. Didn't you know he had an aneurysm?
A what?
Fatal heart disease.
He said that he had heart trouble, but...
Heart trouble? His doctor says he couldn't have lived 8 or 10 months anyway. And you might have got something in the will.
So that's why he did it.
Did what?
Killed himself.
You still stick to that crazy story you told the boy?
He's going to kill me, isn't he? With 3,000 volts of electricity.
Inspector Mullen.
What are you doing here, Sergeant? Didn't I say I wasn't to be disturbed?
All the same, Inspector. I thought I'd better do it. There's a young lady here, a Miss Betty Andrews. I think you'd better see her.
I'll see her when I'm good and ready.
And I think you'd better see her, Inspector. We've just heard from Mr. Destry's lawyer.
Well?
He said that that young fellow there, Mr. Pendrell, inherits $25,000 in Mr. Destry's new will.
Did you hear that, son? Do you see what you'd have gotten if you hadn't gone and killed him?
He was keeping his promise, that's all. A fine lot of good it'll do me now.
But look, Inspector, I've just talked to the medical examiner, and he says there's no poison in Mr. Destry's body.
Say that again?
There's no poison in the old man's body.
Somebody's kidding you. An empty glass with the smell of mercury cyanide and a dead man with a congested face behind the mask? What did kill him then?
Well, if you'd like to listen to Miss Andrews, Inspector, she's right here now.
I think you'd better listen, Inspector. I've been trying to tell you all afternoon.
Go ahead, Miss Andrews.
I've been over and over it. And until they got the medical report, nobody would listen.
Can you tell us what killed John Destry?
Yes. Poison killed him.
But the sergeant's just been saying there was no poison in the body.
Inspector, will you listen? I was at Mr. Destry's apartment late last night.
Well, so what? You didn't kill him, did you?
The servant said he'd gone to bed. So I looked into the study to see if there were any instructions.
Was Mr. Destry dead then?
I don't know. I couldn't see his body because it was hidden behind the desk. I didn't even learn he was dead until late this afternoon. But I did see a full glass of brandy.
A full glass, did you say?
Yes. So I picked up the glass and poured the brandy back into the decanter. That's what he always made us do. And I didn't leave any fingerprints because I was still wearing my gloves. And that was the same glass you later found empty.
But you still are not telling us what was the poison that killed John Destry.
It was the poison in his own system. He worked out this plot to convict Bob Pendrell. Only just as he stretched out his hand to drink the cyanide...
Inspector, I think I see it. It was his last great hour. He couldn't resist such gloating as he'd never known before.
That's it. His heart wouldn't stand it. And he fell dead behind the desk. And I think, if you study the expression on his face, you'll find he died laughing.
And so ends Will You Make a Bet with Death. Tonight's story of Suspense. The part of Bob Pendrell was played by Michael Fitzmaurice. Betty was played by Leslie Woods. John Destry was played by Nicholas Joy. And in supporting roles were Ted DeCorsia and Charles Slattery. Again next Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Wartime, a story dedicated to the thrill of the nighttime, the hushed voice, and the prowling step. Another adventure in Suspense. William Spear, the producer, Mark Loeb, the director in the absence of John Dietz, and John Dixon Carr, the author, are collaborators on Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Yep, not a good bet.
Yep.
A great deal. John Dixon Carr, again, a great writer and a nice story there.
Yes. It had a lot to do, you'll see when we get into, we haven't done a lot of early suspenses, but when you get into him, you'll see that the first year and a half, he had a lot to do with that. Even if it weren't his stories, I think he did some story editing and such for it, so... really helped put suspense on the path that it became the great show that it became.
I didn't know that. Here's something else I didn't know. Eerie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Apologies to Gar. If you ever make a bet with Beth, only bet your reputation. It's better to eat a little crow than to be a dead one. There we go.
What's your problem, Marvel?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, my. An intense story, though. That was right. That Fogsby said it was intense. It really was an intense story. Really built up to something. And then you felt like, you know, he was trapped and stuck. And then you found out he wasn't, after all.
Very good tale with some twists and turns.
Twisty-turny, yes it was.
Which death can do.
Starts off our first. Yep.
Death is scary because it's inevitable. It's like taxes. It's just going to happen no matter what you do.
That's true. Yeah, no matter what you do, unless you're Captain Kirk, the guy who's beat death so many times that it's just something you don't think about with Captain Kirk. That's all.
Yeah, there's some characters that are eternal. I guess he's one of them.
Yeah, I would think so. You just you put him in an impossible situation. He still doesn't. He may not win, but he doesn't lose. How's that?
There you go. And if he doesn't win, it's not for long.
Yes, that's true.
He will turn the tide, and we will turn over to another program for you. More about death.
Right, and if we are going along the chronological date as we are doing tonight, our next story is another tale from Hyman Brown and Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
This one I'm not familiar with, like I was the first story tonight. This one's called Death in the Depths.
Yep, and that's a hard thing to say. And I think even Raymond has a little bit of trouble with that, because indeed it is Raymond, your host tonight. And, of course, get ready for some Lipton tea and Lipton soup commercials to go along with that.
That generally means we'll hear from Mary.
Does generally mean that, yes.
Yeah.
And it means that again tonight.
And we have a broadcast date of
February 2nd, 1945.
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host, Raymond, inviting you once again to join our scary company. Please come in, won't you? We have a full quiver of shivers this evening and a... What? You say it's rather cold in here. Well, some of the chills of our story must have leaked out. Why don't you all huddle together? There's so much comfort in having someone else beside you instead of being beside yourself.
Now, Mr. Raymond, that's no way to welcome people. You're apt to chase them away talking so scary-like.
What? Oh, hello, Mary Bennett. So, you don't think I'm a good host, huh? Maybe I should say, lay your little head on a pillow. Are you comfy? There. Now, Uncle Raymond will drone you to sleep with a bedtime story. And when you wake up, Aunt Mary will give you a nice hot plate of Lipton's noodle soup.
Oh, dear. There's just no talking to you. Folks, please don't listen to the way he talks about Lipton's noodle soup. Try it for yourself. You just don't know how good noodle soup can be until you've tasted Lipton's. It's got such a grand chickeny flavor. It really tastes homemade. And then, of course, Lipton's noodle soup comes in a package, so it's no work to prepare. You just empty it into boiling water, and in a jiffy, soup's on. And another thing, Lipton's makes lots more and costs less than canned soup.
Well, thanks for the hot facts, Mary. And here's a fact for you. Did you know that more than two-thirds of the Earth's entire surface is unknown? The salty wastes of the sea? Only a short distance under the surface, death lurks in 100 different shapes. And that's where we're going to take you tonight, in Robert Newman's strange story of Death in the Depths. A wharf in a small seaside town a few minutes before midnight. Moored to the dock, just barely visible through the thick fog, is a stubby, broad-beamed ship. Suddenly, out of the swirling mist, a man and woman appear. He is tall, heavy-set, carries a sea bag over his shoulder. She's slim, attractive. They reach the end of the dock, and he stops.
I can't do it, Leela. I just can't. That's all there's to it.
Stop arguing and get on board there.
Well, I'm telling you, I can't, Leela. I can't. Why even think about it? The way the water looks down under. The feel of it pressing against
you. And I'm telling you that you are going, whether you like it or not. 2 years of living in crummy second-rate rooming houses. That's plenty, see? Too much. You're going back to doing something that really pays off.
But, Leela,
I told you to shut up. Now stop squawking and let's go aboard.
Okay. Hi there, the Gasker Bay. Captain Brody around?
I'm Brody. Come aboard.
Evening, Captain. My name's Farrell. This is my wife.
Hello.
I understand you're going off on a job and you're looking for divers.
Well, yes, I am. We've got a salvage job off the Keys. It's a tough one, 20 fathoms. We only use real deep water men. What did you say your name was again?
Farrell. Steve Farrell.
You mean Big Steve Farrell? Why don't you say so? Sure, I can use you. Wait right there. I'll go get the paper.
Okay, Captain.
Well, was that so tough?
Leela, for heaven's sakes, don't make me do it. You don't know what you're asking me to do it. It's like sending me... Leela. Did you hear that? 9 bells.
What of it?
What of it? There's no such thing as 9 bells. It's like a clock striking 13 o'clock. And it means death. The only other time I ever heard it was when Curtis...
Listen, I'm getting sick of this, see? You don't want to do any more diving because you've lost your nerve. And because a bell rings 9 times instead of 8, you say it means something. Well, what do you think it would mean if I told the police a couple of things I know? I'll tell you. It would mean the chair. Now, how do you like that?
Leela, you don't know.
Take care of yourself, Stevie boy. I'll be seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Feeling pretty good, aren't you? You think you're getting just what you want? Well, maybe you are. Because when I sign those papers, I won't be signing on as a diver. I'll be signing my own death certificate. All set, Captain. Any instructions before they close me up?
No, Steve. Can't expect much on a first dive, but see if you can determine the extent of the damage. All we know about her now is that she's about 1,500 ton. Her name was the Santa Elena. She went down the collision.
Right, Captain.
Okay, close them up. Start the pumps. Go away.
I'm scared. Scared. I swore I'd never go down again. But here I am. It's all just the way I remembered it. Nothing at first but the quiet. Just the pump, like the echo of your heart beating. And the light fading as you go down. Getting darker. And the cold. The pressure building up. Pressing harder and harder. Gripping you tighter and tighter as if you were being swallowed by something alive. Always down below where you can't see it. Something weighty. Something that... Stop it. Gotta stop it. There was a time when I really used to like diving. When did it all begin? This fear.
Yes, that night in the bar in Tampa. She told me she married Curly.
Well, this is certainly quite an evening you're giving me, Steve. It's more like a wake than a celebration. Why are you looking at me like that?
Wondering whether I should kill you. Whether I should talk to Curly and let him do it.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. You know Curly. You ever found out how things were with you and me? Well, he's just young enough and crazy enough about you to put you away for keeps.
I can handle Curly with my little finger. Besides, you wouldn't do anything like that.
Wouldn't I? Why'd you meet me here tonight? You know, it's because you wish you were married to me instead of him.
So what? What are you going to do about it? You know darn well he'll never let me go.
No. I guess he won't, but... we've got to do something.
Yeah, but what?
After all, he works for me. Diving's kind of dangerous. As a matter of fact, we're getting off on a job tomorrow that's pretty tricky.
Steve.
When you want something badly enough, there's always a way of getting it.
That was the beginning. That wasn't when I was afraid for the first time. That came later. 2 days later, out on the reefs. 2 days of being with Curly and talking to him. Knowing all the time what I was going to do. And that last dive, late in the afternoon. Standing on deck with Andy, the pump man, and watching Curly through the clear water. Watching him move across the deck of the Hulk. As cool as she was, and...
You going down too, Steve?
Yeah, Andy. Maybe we can wind up today and start home tomorrow. You can handle both of us?
Sure. Only watch the coral over on the port side there, sharp as a razor. Almost took Curly's boot off this morning. If you get into any trouble, well, I'm all alone up here.
I'll watch it. Want to button me up?
Yeah, sure.
Then, just the way I'm going down now, I still wasn't afraid. Not yet. I was too busy figuring out just how I was going to do it. I'm landing on the bottom and starting to work my way toward the hulk over the coral. There was Curly's hose and safety line, lying on the coral, snaking its way to the hulk where he was working. I didn't have to look up. I could tell by the shadow I was under the hull of our ship, so Andy couldn't see me. And I came to a place where Curly's line was lying right next to a coral spur. And I knew that was it. I bent down, looked it around the spur so Andy couldn't pull him up.
Hello, Curly. Curly, try your line. I think it's fouled.
And I did it. Took out my knife and cut Curly's air hose. Andy must have known it even before Curly did. As soon as the bubble started pouring out of the end of the hose.
Hello, Curly. Can you still hear me? I think you're in trouble. Your airline's cut. Hold it and save whatever air you've got. Steve's on the bottom, too. He'll get over to you. Did you hear, Steve?
Yeah. I heard. I'm going as fast as I can.
Steve, you gotta hurry. Where are you?
I just hit the deck, but it's crowded up and I can't see anything. Where's Curly?
Up forward, near the ship's bell. Listen, he says he's going to ring it so you can follow the sound. And for heaven's sake, hurry.
Of the sound. As if I didn't know where he was. Straight forward. I could see him now, his lifeline taut, so he couldn't move. Holding his air hose with one hand and ringing the bell with the other. He was swaying back and forth. And I started counting the strokes. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Then he slid down onto the deck. The air bubbled out of his helmet, and I knew he was dead. I remember thinking, 9 bells. 1 bell after midnight. And suddenly it came over me that this was something I was never going to be able to forget. Never. That every time I went down, I was going to see him swaying there, hanging onto the bell, waiting for me. Waiting. Waiting.
Oh, that's why Steve Farrell wouldn't go back to his old profession of deep-sea diving. I should think it would lose some of its appeal if you expect to meet a dead man every time you go down. How about that, Mary? Climb aboard and tell us what you think.
Well, Mr. Raymond, I certainly wouldn't like to be a deep-sea diver. To be all alone down there in the cold water with fishes and all sorts of things swimming around you.
Mm-mm, that's not for me.
Oh, but just think, Mary, when you come up, you could have a nice hot plate of Lipton's noodle soup.
I think you've really got something there. Lipton's noodle soup would sure be welcome at a time like that. It's such a heartwarming dish. It perks you up just looking at it, looking at those tender noodles floating in that golden broth. My, I'm getting to talk fancy. But really, folks, Lipton's does taste sort of special. It's got a chicken-y flavor, and it just tastes homemade, like the old-fashioned noodle soup you used to make yourself. But heavens, I don't want to be interrupting Mr. Raymond's story, so I'll just say, try Lipton's real soon, won't you, folks?
Real soon. Get that Lipton's real soon.
I will.
I'm a fan. I like the packaged Lipton soup. Uh-oh, we lost Dave. He'll be back in just a minute. Not to worry, as we continue with our stories about death. Wondering if any of you ever had a near-death experience. I have. And it was fun. Weird. Anyway, Dave's back with us.
You had a fun near-death experience?
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I won't ask on the air, but I'll definitely be asking off the air.
Yeah.
I can't think of a near-death experience that would be fun.
The fun part was knowing that you're staying right where you are. That's the fun
part.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
They tell you, no, you must go back to the other end of the light. Yes.
Go back to the light. As I recall.
But I don't want to go. I don't want to go.
Yeah. I'm not done annoying people here.
Yeah,
bringing them good radio with you, and most of the time
have a couple of good stories, and have another good story coming up after this one yet. But yeah, we've got quality stories going on tonight.
Yeah, and we're only halfway home here.
That's right. Woo!
So with good that old, being said, we pretty much need to wrap up Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Death.
Okay.
The depths. Sure, so good.
Now, shall I go on with the story of death in the depths of the sea? That strange underwater world where dead men ring their own death knell on the bells of sunken ships? Okay. Just a moment later now. Steve Farrell is still standing on the deck of the sunken freighter, Santa Elena.
Hello, Steve. Steve, anything the matter?
Why, no, Captain. I'm sorry. I thought I heard something funny, and I guess I lost my nerve for a minute. After all, this is my first dive in quite a while, but I'm okay now.
You sure? We can haul you up, send Mike down.
No, I'm okay. I'm going to stay.
Well, all right, but don't forget, we can't see you from up here. Keep talking all the time so we'll know exactly where you are and what you're doing.
Check. I'm up forward now on the port side of the deck. I'm just going inside. Companionway door is jammed shut and I'm working on it. There she is. And now I'm inside in the corridor. It's pretty dark. I'm switching on my light. I can see now, a little way ahead of me at least. It's all kind of queer.
Queer? How?
Just funny, strange. He's canted over on the starboard side, so the card is tipped over at an angle. Sort of like a dream where everything's turned around. Kind of different and still familiar. Why does it seem so familiar? It seems to remind me of something else. That's it. Corridor of the hotel right after we were married. Walking down it with her, Leela. Out onto the terrace. The way she took the cigarette I gave her. Smiled at me. Very sure of herself.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Why the smile, baby?
Why shouldn't I smile? I'm young, healthy, and I'm married to a guy I like. A guy who's going to take real good care of me.
I sure am, baby. Not only that, now on, things are going to be different. Didn't have a chance to tell you before, but I'm through with diving. For keeps.
What do you mean?
Just that. I sold a boat yesterday and all the equipment. I'm out of that racket for good.
You shouldn't have done that, Steve. Not without talking to me about it first. What do you expect to do from now on?
Oh, I'm all set on that. I got a job as a second engineer in a freighter, the Arcturus.
Well, I guess that'll be all right. For a while, anyway.
What do you mean, for a while? You think you're going to tell me what kind of work I should do and what kind I shouldn't do?
But of course, Steve. Like I said, I'm your wife. And besides, if I wanted to, I could tell either you or anyone else a lot of other things. Like why you decided to give up diving.
What are you talking about? Gave it up because I was sick of it.
Is that the reason? Or is it because you're afraid that if you did do any more diving, you might start seeing things?
Seeing what?
Well, after all, you were right there when Curly had his accident and got drowned. The funny thing is, you were talking about how he might have an accident just before you went off on that trip. I've been thinking I really ought to talk to Andy about it since he was there, too, and find out just how it happened.
Andy's not around anymore. He left town right after I paid him off.
Oh, I see. Well, remember that the police could probably find him, Steve, if they should ever want to ask him any questions.
Steve, Steve, what's the matter? Why don't you answer? Where are you?
Hello? I'm sorry, Captain. Nothing's the matter. I guess I was just thinking about something else and... I'm at the end of the corridor now. Just open the door to the engine room. I'm going across the gratings now and down the stairs. Honey, something kind of familiar about all this. Pattern on the griddles. Picture the stairs. Captain, what did you say the name of this tub was?
Santa Elena. Panamanian registry, I think. Why?
She kind of reminded me of another ship, the Arcturus. The Arcturus. What made me think of her? I know why. A year and a half in which I almost forgot about Curly. What had happened down there on the deck of the schooner. A year and a half in which I was almost happy, even with Leela. And that night, the night McHenry came up to me while I was on watch in the engine room.
Hi, Steve. How's it going?
Swell, Chief. I just cut number two in again, and she's purring like a kitten.
Good. Look, Steve, the old man claims he's handling a bit heavy. He wanted to sound out the pumps and check the bilge. I told him he was crazy, but, well, maybe we'd better.
Okay, Chief, I'll get on it right away.
Anyone around to give you a hand?
I don't really need any help. But if I want him, Swanson's there someplace.
Well, report to me as soon as you're finished.
Hi, Chief. Oh, there you are, Swanson.
Hey, where you going?
Come back.
Oh,
let's
go.
Hey, wait. Wait a minute. You're not Swanson. Who are you?
Hey, I'm nobody, Chief.
Stowaway, huh? Hiding down here behind a boiler.
Give me a break, will you, Chief? I ain't doing nobody any harm. Where I'll be. Steve, big Steve Farrell.
Andy. Andy Andrews.
And I wanted a break. This is terrific, Steve, like money in the bank.
What happened to you, anyway?
Oh, usual thing, run of tough luck. Been out of work for about a year now. Look, Steve, I'm pretty hungry. I ain't had nothing to eat since we left port.
I guess I could pick up some stuff in the galley for you. But we'll have to be careful. Be the devil to pay if they found out I was hiding you.
Good old Steve. I know you wouldn't let an old shipmate down. And, Steve, while we're at it, I could use a little cash, too.
Yeah, yeah, I figured that. Well, when we get to port, I guess I could let you have 10 or 20.
That's not enough. I was figuring on, 500.
For starter.
500. Are you nuts?
I don't think so, Steve. You see, after Curly had his little accident and you sold the boat and all the equipment, I figured you'd given up diving because you were kind of upset about it. Then I heard you'd married his widow, that Leela dame. I started thinking back. I remembered how Curly's air hose looked after we pulled him up. The place where it was cut wasn't rough, like it had been done by Coral. It was clean, like it had been done with a knife.
You. Now that's it. Blackmail.
Well, why do you have to use words like that, Steve?
Okay, Andy. It's gonna be a little tough to get, but... Wait a minute.
What is it?
Someone's coming, one of the wipers. We gotta find some place for you to hide. I know. Down there in the bilge. Here, climb in. Right down through that
manhole. But it's almost full of water.
There's plenty of room and you'll be safe there. Really safe.
Oh, okay, but you better not... Oh, what are you doing? Let go of me! Let go! Help! Help!
You'll be safe here, all right. I'll see to that. Stop struggling like that, Andy. Not going to do you any good. And I'm in too deep already to
let you go wandering around with what you know.
And, weeks before they find you down here in the bilges. Maybe they never will. And if they do, they'll figure you tried to hide down there and got drowned all by yourself.
Talk up and stop mumbling. What? Where are you now?
Down at the bottom of the ladder in the engine room. This light's not too good. The boarders are right in front of me. And seems to be some kind of a brass plate on the floor here.
Captain! This isn't the Santa Elena. It's the Arcturus.
What are you talking about?
It is. Don't you understand it? It's the ship where I kill him. And he must still be down here. Down the bilges. Get me out of here. Pull me up. Pull me up.
Okay, Steve. Now take it easy. We'll get you up. Start hauling him up. Mike, you better go down there fast. See what the trouble is.
Hurry up, for heaven's sake. I think I see something moving back there. Behind the boilers. Hey, Brody. Looking like it did when Curly. That means that he's here, too. The boat's here. Can't you get me out?
We're trying, but something's wrong with your line. Seems to be fouled. Now, look, Steve. Try to get out yourself. Start working your way back along your line.
No good, Steve. You know that, don't you? You're here to stay.
Andy. It is you.
Sure, Steve. And I got a friend with me. A friend of yours, too. He's standing right next to you.
Andy.
We waited a long time, Steve, but now you're here with us. And now you're going to know exactly what it was like with both of us. You're going to know what it's like to drown.
Steve, why don't you answer? What's the matter? Steve, your lifeline and air hose, I think they're gone.
Curly, no. Let me go.
It's too late, Steve. This is it. This is the way it was with us. Trying to fight it first, holding your breath. Then, when you can't fight it any longer, letting go. The water rushing in, into your mouth, nose. You choke at first, try to fight some more. Then everything starts to go black, and you relax. There are lights moving in the darkness, and suddenly you feel very peaceful. Very free. Peaceful. Very free.
Did you find him, Mike?
Yeah. He was right where you said. Down in the engine room. They're hauling him up now.
It's going to be tough breaking the news to his wife. How'd it happen?
There's a heavy iron door leading into the engine room. It swung shut, cut his lifeline and air hose.
You're saying an awful lot of stuff that didn't make sense, but there was something about a bell.
Well, his lifeline was looped around the bell on the foredeck. Must have gotten caught when you tried to pull him up. And that may have rung the bell a few times. There was something else, though. You remember you said he kept asking if the ship's name was really the Santa Helena?
Yeah.
Well, there was a brass plate in the engine room with her original name on it. And it was the Arcturus. Yeah, they must have changed it when they re-registered her.
That is funny. There's one thing that's even funnier. Of course, the whole thing was an accident, but I wonder what made that door close. Oh, you do, huh? Even with two able-bodied ghosts about? But that's the way we like to leave you, with a couple of things to keep you wondering. And when we do, then we've known we've really rung the bell, the funeral bell.
Oh, Mr. Raymond, with all the different kinds of bells there are, why do you have to talk about that kind?
All right, Mary, pick your own bell, see if I care.
All right, then I'll choose a dinner bell.
Will you ring it 9 times, huh?
No, sir, you only have to ring it once if you're serving Lipton's noodle soup. And folks will come swarming to the table, because they know it takes Lipton's to show how good a noodle soup can be.
Now, before I close the inner sanctum, here's a word of advice. If you should have nightmares tonight about drowning men and wake up with a start and see a strange figure in your room, a figure with staring eyes and seaweed in its hair, dripping water on the floor, don't be alarmed. Just ask it for its haunting license. Brother. By the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is Net of Cobwebs by Elizabeth Banksay Holding. Well, now it's time to really close that squeaking door. Until next week at this same time, when Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present another Inner Sanctum mystery, directed by Hyman Brown. So until then, good night. Pleasant dreams.
Damn, that guy is cool.
Folks, I don't know how you feel, but that spooky bell gave me the shivers. Right now, I'd like to hear a cheerful sound that'd make me forget all about it. Yes, I'd like to hear a tea kettle singing on the stove. And when that water is at a good rolling boil, let's have a cup of Lipton tea. You know, the tea with the brisk flavor. That word brisk, B-R-I-S-K, means that Lipton's has a lively, full-bodied flavor. It never tastes flat or wishy-washy. So don't forget Lipton tea. And don't forget to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum Mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Erie House Radio. Well, fun.
True. Story. You know, and I think it's so great. The music and this just with the organ, and you know, Quiet Please was just with an organ and a piano, and yet some of these shows like Suspense and even what he did with the Mystery Theater, great orchestrations that went behind it, but he really captured whatever the feel of the moment was with that organ in this particular show.
Yeah, some organs in these older shows are, it makes it kind of, I don't know, dated to the point where it's almost silly, but not in this case. The use of the organ here was really effective for these early.
It was throughout the whole program, but, and you know what, throughout the entire run of Inner Sanctum, no matter what network it was on at first NBC, then this one was on CBS, and then ended up on ABC before it went off the air. That's the only music they ever had throughout the show was the organ, you know.
Yeah.
That's what Hyman Brown decided, and that's what he stuck with, And there was nothing wrong with that. It really worked for the show.
Yep, and Inner Sanctum is another one of those radio shows that just crossed into all forms of media. There were the group of Inner Sanctum movies and a movie entitled Inner Sanctum. You had magazines, comic books, and, of course, these great radio shows. Did they make TV, Inner Sanctum? I think
they did. I think Hyman Brown made it for one season. It was syndicated. And Hyman Brown just wasn't crazy about television. He didn't like what the television took away from you, that radio gave to you, your imagination. You're being able to see it. And Paul McGrath, who did the narration for the radio, for the biggest part of the radio run, also did the host, the unseen host, in the television version as well. There are one or two, I think just one, that is available on the YouTubes. So if you want to go in there, that is a place you can find that one episode. It's got the same music, and again, Paul McGrath is the host. It was syndicated. It wasn't a network show. It was syndicated. So it means he could sell it to whomever and wherever it wanted to be. And I thought it worked fairly well, for considering it was pretty close to live. It was filmed, but it was live television, like that, you know, so.
Yeah, before a live studio audience, as they used to say.
Yeah, before a live studio audience without the studio audience, yeah.
Yes.
But, yes, that was and those are always fun, you know. Not very often you seem to have a clinker, even with the mystery theaters from time to time. The stories just aren't always hitting the mark. The ones that we share are good ones, but the ones that there are a lot of stories I won't share. These are just don't really hit the mark. A lot of husbands and wives trying to kill each other in some of them, and that just doesn't work. But I don't see that. I don't see that in these Inner Sanctums. Of course, Hyman wasn't trying to do it 7 days a week with Inner Sanctum. He was doing it one day a week.
That he was, and doing it well. He cracks himself up. If you notice, he chuckles in a lot
of
his lines.
Yes. He does.
I'm not sure if that's the character or if he's actually amused at the work that he's doing. I'd like to think a little of both.
I would think it's a little bit of both, yeah. I think that, again, being the Raymond was really the granddaddy of the television hosts and a horror host from there, really kind of based because he was a guy that took it tongue-in-cheek. And he was really the first one to really do that. You know, the Hermit took himself seriously. Arch Obler took himself seriously. Even Nancy the old witch kind of took herself somewhat seriously. But Raymond, the Raymond character, didn't take himself seriously. There was a lot of making fun of the scary things and the spooky things. And that really is what the horror hosting on television, I believe, was truly all about.
And Dave, you and I have seen a lot of different horror hosts. Like the ones going into the Horror Host Hall of Fame this year, hoping Dave is one of them. Vote for him now. There's links all over our Facebook pages. And
Yep.
And go ahead and vote for Dave, because he deserves
a lot of people.
In my opinion.
Yeah. In his humble opinion, yes.
Nice.
It is. Truly, and even I know it sounds silly, but to be nominated, it really is an honor to even be thought of, to be in with that group of people. When you look at the list of people that are in there, it's an honor to be thought of being in the same breath with some of those people. So
hey, Linda Lou already voted for you. How about that? Thank you.
She did.
She's there in the chat along with Fogsbane and good old Bob. Thank you for joining us live. I think we have a Jamaican listener today, possibly. A fellow I know who is a new listener. I don't think he's logged in, but should be out there listening. And I was checking the stats. We still get a ton of listens from Sweden. I think Jolly and her friends over there, Jolly O'Leary, who's been posting on our page.
Trying.
A real old-time radio fan. I've seen her posting on some of the radio, old-time radio pages on the Books of Faces. And
okay.
Big-time fan. So glad we could capture her imagination and join us here. We better get rolling with our final offering. It's from The Shadow. This one's called Death Takes the Wheel.
Yeah, this is with our Brett Morrison, who was longer than any of The Shadow. Interesting story. A lot of times they're saying that these are also formula, and this is, I don't feel this one is quite as formula as many of the others or as they became. Maybe because this is still not early, but I think The Shadow went to about 1954, and by the mid, by 53, 54, stories were pretty much, as some people think, they were pretty much a formulatic and stuff. But I don't know, I still get a kick out of them. I still get a kick out of these.
Well, it's a great character, really, if you think about it, and had quite a run. I mean, look, it started, what, in the late 30s, early
40s? 1938, yeah.
Yeah, with Orson Welles and
with
yeah,
Orson Welles, with
the various...
First...
Mm.
Yep.
Yep. And,
Orson,
again,
this one is, as we keep running down the clock here, from September 28th. 1947.
According to some guy in the Himalayas.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret. The hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, Death Takes the Wheel. It's early evening in a richly appointed apartment in the upper 60s. A handsome woman of middle age sits on the edge of a chair, staring fixedly at a photograph. Opposite her, a carefully groomed young man sits disinterestedly examining his fingernail.
This photograph, Gilkin? You're trying to say that's me.
And a very good likeness, I think, Mrs. Cartwright.
Oh, dear. I should have known better than to get mixed up with a man like you. But I was so desperately lonely.
Why the excitement, Mrs. Cartwright? There's been no harm done yet.
But this picture, it's a fake. You're trying to frame me. This is not me.
Do you think your husband would think so, Mrs. Carter?
Oh, my husband. You wouldn't show this to him, Duke. You couldn't. He'd divorce me.
And we wouldn't want that to happen, would we, Mrs. Carter? And it didn't happen. Of course, there would have to be some little consideration.
Oh, so that's it. Blackmail. Oh, I might have known. Well, I won't pay it. I won't.
Now, let's not get theatrical, Mrs. Cartwright. You've too much at stake, and you know it.
Maybe. But maybe I'm not as weak as you think.
What are you going to do, Mrs. Cartwright?
Call the police.
I wouldn't be too hasty, Mrs. Cartwright, if I were you. It might prove fatal.
Oh, put that gun away, you. You wouldn't dare use it.
Police department.
Hello, police department. I was...
Sorry, we couldn't do business, Mrs. Cartwright.
Hello?
This has been wonderful, Duke. Like all good things, I'm afraid it has to end.
Don't say that, darling.
I don't think we'd better see each other anymore.
Oh, I've been looking for you, Mrs. Borden. The boss asked me to have you step into his office.
The boss?
She must mean Nicky Valdez, the man who operates this place.
What does he want with me? I've never even heard of him.
Maybe we'd better find out, darling.
Just follow me, Mrs. Borden.
I don't understand this, Sue.
Well, we'll soon know.
It's me, boss, Lola. I have Mrs. Borden.
Come in, come in. Ah, Miss Borden, come in. It's very lovely this evening.
I don't think I've had the pleasure, Mrs.
Just call me Nick.
I'd rather know what this is all about.
I have some photos I thought you might like to see. Photos of you and the Duke.
What?
Yeah.
Where did you get these pictures? Duke, what do you know about this?
Well, they're just pictures, Belle, taken here at the club.
So you're in it too, huh? What kind of a racket do you people think you're going to pull?
Now, let's be calm, Miss Barton. We ain't going to show these to your husband.
My husband wouldn't believe you.
Of course, if he used to ask around if you'd been seen with Duke.
You're wasting your time, Mr. Valdez. I haven't any money. My husband only gives me an allowance, a very small allowance.
Why, Beth,
you
we
keep
just...
out of this. Well, Mr. Valdez?
You have a new Cadillac convertible, Mrs. Barton. Suppose you were to leave the keys in it tomorrow and it was stolen. You're covered by insurance, no?
Go on.
That's it. We have a market for such a car, a good market. You lose nothing, your husband doesn't find out.
But what?
There's no but, Mrs. Barton. That's the deal. One thing more. You leave the registration in the glove compartment and sign the transfer stuff.
What?
Just a precaution, you understand. If you try to cross us, we'd be protected. Not that we don't trust you, of course.
I see. The car will be in front of my house tomorrow morning at 10 with the key in it. Now, if you don't mind...
May I take you home?
What do you think?
I don't think she likes you, Duke.
No. But I think she likes you, Nicky. I saw the way she looked at you.
This is business, Lola. Strictly business. After we get the car and resell it, we can shake Mrs. Barton down for the rest of her life.
I'm sorry, darling. It's an insurance case I promised to investigate.
Mm-hmm. What kind of insurance?
Stolen cars. They're an epidemic lately. Insurance people feel it's all part of one operation.
Mm-hmm. How about the police?
Well, they've checked all known car thieves and rings. Apparently no luck. Most of the cars were stolen from quite wealthy families.
What's that list you're saying?
It's a list of the stolen cars. Most recent one, for instance, is this Cadillac convertible was stolen this morning from a Mrs. Barden. Belle Barden.
Her name's familiar.
She's the former Belle Barden, the showgirl. Married Ed Barden about a year ago.
Oh, yes, I see. Are you going to see her, Lamont?
Yes, Margot. I think it might be worthwhile having a talk with her. Maybe able to give her some kind of a lead.
Got a message. You wanted to see me, Mrs. Barden.
Oh, how formal you are.
Come on in.
Okay. It's a fancy layer. Kind of out of my class.
Confidentially, mine too. Don't forget I'm only a couple of years out of a chorus line.
You sure didn't do bad.
It's not as fancy as it looks. My husband isn't the most generous soul in the world.
We're doing all right.
Yes, but it's kind of hard waiting, living on pennies till the big cake comes.
Well, you're a pretty regular damn at that, baby. I thought you wanted to see me to beef about your car.
No, no, I can get another car. Well, to tell you the truth, I just wanted to see you again.
Why?
I liked your style the other night. You're my kind of a guy.
You're kidding? Why should a guy like you go for a mug like me when there's a guy like Duke around?
Maybe I just like your touch.
Look, baby. We could go places together.
I could go places with you, Nicky, but the trouble is I like to go first class.
Well, Barton ain't gonna live forever, is he?
That's what I thought when I married him, but it looks like he's going to do it just to spite.
That'd be tough.
Of course, people do have accidents.
Mm-hmm. Might be able to help you out on that, baby.
That's one of the reasons I asked you to drop by here today.
Yeah. About the old man, when's the best time to get at him?
About 6 o'clock at night. He always walks across the street to the taxi stand. But you think the risk is...
I ain't thinking about any risk, baby. What I'm thinking about is how gorgeous you're gonna look in black.
Barton expects to be down. It's almost 6 o'clock.
Well, we'll have to risk it, Margo. Couldn't get here any earlier. I'm poring over motor vehicle reports all afternoon.
Find anything exciting?
I found that the most expensive cars have disappeared from the most unlikely places.
Such as?
Garages, in front of homes, from parking lots. Almost all from places where the thief must have a key.
Oh, isn't that the Barton house right down the street there with that man coming down the steps?
Yes. Well, if I'm not mistaken, it's Barton himself.
Oh, he's rather elderly. Come on, look at that car.
Good Lord. Barton, get back.
He's trying to get back to the car.
Get back! Come on, Margo. I don't know what happened.
Let me see. That car deliberately veered toward him.
I hit and run her, that's what it was. I saw him. Oh, just keep right on going.
Come on, is it bad?
He's dead, Margo.
Let me through. It's my husband. Let me through. Ed, will somebody do something? Get a doctor.
I'm afraid it's too late, Mrs. Barton.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Who did this? Didn't anybody see who did it?
Oh, yes, I did, lady.
I saw the accident, Mrs. Barton. I was on my way up to see you about your stolen car.
What?
I got the number, too.
You got the number of the car that hit him? What was it?
Cadillac convertible, license number T-917.
Oh,
I'd like to talk to you about it, Mrs. Barton, before I do anything.
No, later. What did you say your name was?
Cranston. Lamont Cranston. I'm a private investigator.
I'll call you tomorrow, but not now. Let me see.
That was cruel, Lamont, bothering about the car now.
Perhaps, Margot. You see, the license number of the car that killed her husband is the same as the license number of the car Belle Barton reported stolen almost a week ago.
I know.
Look, I warn you, Nicky. If you've been seeing that Barton woman, I'll...
Lola, tell you with the Barton dame, it's business.
And it better stay that way. Because if you... Hello?
Let me talk to Nicky. This is Belle Barton.
He isn't here. He...
Give me that phone. Hello?
Nicky, something's gone wrong.
Is that any?
There was a witness, a private detective. He got the license number.
Get his name?
Yes, Lamont Cranston. He was on his way up to see me about my car. He saw the whole thing.
No one else got the number?
I don't think so.
Don't worry a pretty little head about it. I'll take care of Cranston. I'll take good care of him.
Dirty double-cross. You are in love with us.
Forget it, Lola. You and me all the way, just like it always was. Right now, there's a guy we got to take care of. A guy named Cranston.
What are you going to do, Nicky?
Maybe he's going to have an accident. Maybe a car might jump the curb. What do you say? Will you do it for me, baby?
Why me?
Because you're a dame. Everybody knows how women drivers get excited.
No.
Lola, you do this one thing for me and we'll drop the Barton dame for good. It'll be just you and me, baby.
Promise me?
Word of honor, baby.
Lamont, do you think Mrs. Barton knows something about her husband's death?
I think it was something more than an accident, Margot. After all, it's a peculiar car thief that first steals a car, then hangs around the house of its previous owner almost a week.
Are you sure the number was the same as the stolen car?
Positive.
How about the police? Didn't they be told?
Of course. First, I intend to give Mrs. Barton an opportunity to tell them. That'll be evidence of her good faith.
Commissioner Weston won't like it if you hold out on him.
He'd like it a lot less if I started him on a false scent.
Look at that car, Lamont. Flashing funny.
Flashing in so low, Margaret. Looks like it's out of control.
It's cutting us away, Lamont.
Back, Margaret, back. Get out of the way.
Part one comes to a crashing conclusion. Let's see how this thing wraps up in just a little bit.
Yeah, it's just the car running over the curb heading towards Margot Lane and Lamont Cranston. Whew.
Yep.
Like I said, this is not a formulaic there. That's spooky stuff there. Spooky stuff.
Very spooky, as death should be.
Yep. And that's what we got here all weekend long. We have all kinds of death here at Erie House Radio this weekend.
Yeah, that includes tomorrow. We'll get into details about that after we wrap up our final segment, our final program. This one will be from The Shadow. Part two. Coming up, let's knock that out right now so we can do some shameless promotion a little bit later on.
Absolutely.
Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane are investigating a stolen car ring. They are walking down a deserted street that evening when suddenly a car swerves out, jumps the curb, and tries to pin them against the brick wall.
Lamont, are you all right?
It's just a few bruises, I think.
Oh.
Fender just caught me and threw me as I jumped.
Thank heavens, John. If you hadn't pushed me out of the way, I'd...
Let me through here, please. Let me through. Anybody hurt?
No, officer, nothing serious.
Who's the driver of this car?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, who's the driver?
I guess she got excited and disappeared when the crowd started to form up.
She?
It was a woman. I didn't get a good look at her, though.
Probably lost control. Well, she'll come forward. Want to press a complaint, mister?
No, officer. There's no harm done. I'll just get along home, get some presentable clothes.
Okay, suit yourself. All right, here. Let the people...
That was awfully close, Lamont.
I think it was a deliberate attempt to kill me.
Oh, but who'd do such a thing?
Same people who killed Ed Barton. After all, somebody knows that I got the death car's number.
Bell Barton.
Right. So now, instead of talking to Lamont Cranston, I think she'd better talk to the Shadow.
Out front. He'll be right in when he's got his alibi set. What happened?
I must have duped. I didn't get Cranston. He jumped just as I tried to pin him against the wall.
Uh-oh, Nikki isn't going to like that, Lola. Nikki ain't going to like what, Duke? She didn't get Cranston. What?
I did, like you said, Nikki, but he moved too fast.
I see. Well, what do we do now, boss? Lola's got to give herself up. Tell the cops you got scared when you thought you hit the guy and you ran. Tell him anything.
I can't, Nicky. Don't make me. I can't.
No? I think you ought to go away, Lola. For your health.
Oh, boss. Now, wait a second.
You wouldn't kill me.
Maybe you're going to kill yourself, Lola. Maybe when the cops look up the registration of that car and come here looking for you, they'll find you couldn't face the music.
You'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd like me to commit suicide? Well, think again, wise guy.
When the cops come for me...
They'll find you a suicide. Just like I said.
Taking inventory of your new belongings, Mrs. Barton?
Who said that? I heard someone. Who said that?
I am the Shadow.
Shadow? I thought you were just a legend.
A legend to the innocent. A nightmare to the guilty, Mrs. Barton.
Well, why do you come to me? I haven't done anything.
Perhaps you can tell me how it happens that your car was used in the accident that killed your husband?
I don't know. That car was stolen over a week ago.
Stolen?
Yes, I left it out front overnight, and the next morning it was gone. I notified the police.
Very clever, Mrs. Barton. That's not the whole truth.
I don't know what you mean.
You arranged for your car to be stolen, didn't you, Mrs. Barton?
I couldn't help it. It was blackmail. They made me turn the car over to them.
Who made you turn it over, Mrs. Barton?
It's a gang headed by Nicky Valdez.
It was Nicky Valdez who killed your husband?
I don't know. I haven't seen the car since I left it out front that night.
If you've told the whole truth, I'll help you, Mrs. Barton. But if you've lied, I'll return and you'll answer to the Shadow.
I haven't lied, Shadow. Shadow. Gone. I'd better warn him right away. Hello, this is Bell. Don't talk. Just listen. Something's happened. We've got to get rid of the other two. What? Lola dead? I see. Well, that simplifies everything. That leaves just one for us to take care of. Tonight, Lamont's place is closed. There's not even a light here in the back.
Good. I want to get a look at his record. If I'm right, he's the head of a large-scale blackmail ring.
But that's breaking in, and Commissioner Weston wouldn't like that.
Maybe not, Margot, but he likes blackmailers a lot less. Come on up these steps. I think this is the back entrance to the office. Lamont.
Careful, Lamont. Lamont, look.
Yes.
Is she dead, Lamont?
Very dead, Margo.
Look, here's a note.
Let me see it. I can't face it. Tonight I ran down a man with my car. You tried to make me go to the police and tell them what happened. I killed him. I guess there's no other way out for me now. Lola Martinez.
Oh, Lamont, how awful. She thought she killed you. What are you looking for?
Note says she killed Duke. Who is Duke?
Did you hear that?
Behind the desk.
Man. Been shot.
Let me take a look at him. Just a shoulder wound, but he's lost a lot of blood. Must be Duke. Duke. Can you hear me?
Who are you?
My name is Cranston. I just found Lola's body in a suicide note. Did she shoot you?
No. It was Nicky. He faked the suicide note, killed her, and thought he'd killed me. He's gone crazy. Trying to get rid of anyone who can testify against him.
Nicky Valdez, eh? Where is he now?
I think he's headed for the Barton place.
Mrs. Barton.
Will you be all right, Duke? And we still have time to get to the Barton apartment.
I'm all right. Go ahead.
Get Commissioner Weston on the phone, Margo. This time, I think I'll get the whole story.
Hello?
What? Didn't expect me, baby?
Yes, I didn't expect you so soon.
Come here, baby.
Oh, kiss me, please. Nicky, no, call. Hello? Yes. Yes, I see. Thank you for calling.
Ah, farewell.
I'm sorry, Nicky. What did you say?
That call must have been important. What was it?
Your death warrant.
What did you say?
I said it was your death warrant.
What is it?
This, my dear Nicky, is what is commonly known as the kiss-off. That call was from Duke.
Duke?
Yes. Duke and Stupid Ace, did you really think I could go for you? Didn't you know that Duke and I have been laughing at you?
Duke and you. So it was a cross, eh?
A beautiful cross, Nicky. You see, everything leads back to you. You had my car. My car was used to kill my husband.
Very pretty picture with a frame to match, eh?
That's right. Cranston just left your place, Nicky. When he walks in with the cops, I'm going to shoot you. And they'll come just in time to see that it was self-defense.
You played me for a sucker.
Don't try anything, Nicky.
You think I'll get away with this?
You've gotten rid of my husband for me. Lola's out of the way. I'll get rid of you. And that leaves you and me. And my husband's money, of course.
Why, you double-crossed
me. This is it, Nicky.
What are you doing?
We've got to look as though we've had a struggle, haven't we?
Nice show you're putting on, Mrs. Barton.
Shadow.
I said I'd be back.
He tried to kill me, Shadow. He killed my husband. He wanted to force me to marry him. I just got the gun away
this
from
line.
Him.
This sure I killed her husband. But it was her idea. She was going to knock me off.
Quiet. Now drop that gun, Mrs. Barton. Drop it.
Okay. But you'll never get me.
No, you don't, Mrs. Barton.
Let go of me.
Oh, no. We need you to testify against Duke and Nicky, just as we'll need them to testify against you.
You got Duke?
The police already have him. They're on their way here to pick you two up right now.
According to tonight's paper, Duke and Nicky are trying to outdo each other in telling everything, Lamont.
Yeah, it was quite a setup. Apparently, Duke was the lure for lonesome ladies. He'd wine them and dine them in their husband's absence. Then one day, they'd spring a photo of the two of them taken at Nicky's nightclub.
Then they'd blackmail her, of course.
Exactly. If she didn't have the cash, they'd take her car, have her leave the keys in it, park it in an available place. She'd sign the transfer certificate so they'd have an additional hold on her.
How about Belle?
She wasn't part of the gang, Margot, but she was as vicious as any of them. She saw a chance to have Nicky get rid of her husband for her, so she played up to him. She's really in love with Duke.
Mm-hmm. What made you suspicious of the setup, Margot?
Well, I guess the truth when I saw Duke's wound. The angle was upward, indicating it was self-inflicted. If Nicky had shot him, Nicky would have had to shoot from the floor. Besides, Nicky would never have left him there alive. A man like Valdez would have been sure he was dead.
Well, I hope the whole gang gets what's coming to them.
They will, Margot. Death houses all over the country are filled with people who were sure they knew how to commit a perfect crime.
That wraps up our final episode for tonight. That was The Shadow and Death Takes the Wheel.
Yep. And, cross between blackmail and auto theft ring and all, and murder. Murder all over the place.
Murder's
good. No conscience in an old-time radio, that's for sure.
Nope. Murder's good. Well, at least for a story.
At least for a story, yes. And speaking of that, we have another story tomorrow night. Another tale from the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Always glad to have CBS Radio Mystery Theater on a Saturday night. It fits our hour-and-a-half format, which starts at 6:30 Eastern right here. And hopefully our dear, dear friend and partner, radio partner, Gar the Ghoul, is better for some horrible horror right after our show. Because he usually broadcasts at 8 Eastern.
And if you tune in tomorrow night, either live or in the archive, you'll not only get a CBS Radio Mystery Theater, but a whole new series of not one, not two, but 12 Death Facts, Dave Facts.
Good Dave Facts are always a hoot, and that'll be tomorrow night right here. God, you know, if I tried really, really, really hard, I could squeeze a tune in here before we get out of here for the night.
Okay. We could do that.
Here we go. I think we'll enjoy it.
Well, folks, I don't know of a better way to start off this special 15 minutes than having you meet our next guest. Some weeks ago, we had a young lady in our show, and we sang a tune that must have caught the fancy of a lot of people. Here is the lovely and talented Miss Carol Richards to join in a second helping of that old stop shoe.
Give me the old soft shoe, I said the old soft shoe. Hello, ha-choo, ha-choo. Play me that old soft shoe and nothing else will do. That's the dance my darling used to do.
We sang love's refrain,
just like a vaudeville theme.
Dance a whole night.
We had the cutest routine.
Strolling love is lame.
Weren't my bonnet to scream?
We'd harmonize and doodly-doo.
Give me that
old soft shoe. I've got that old soft shoe. Hello, a-doo, a-doodly-doodly-doo. Give me that old soft shoe and nothing else will do. That's the dance my darling is to do.
Take a look at that crowd. Look at the people we got.
Isn't that wonderful? We're really packing them in. Hey, look at that old fella in the first row. I wonder what's the matter with him.
Why?
Well, he's been here for 8 shows.
Well, I'm wearing his shoes.
Oh.
We sang love's refrain.
Dean, you were the king of them all.
Danced the whole night through.
And I was the belle of the ball.
Strolling love is lame. We'd harmonize and doodly-doodly-doo. Give me that old soft shoe. I've got that old soft shoe.
A one,
a two, a doodly-doodly-doo.
Play me that old soft shoe when nothing else will do. It reminds me of the only love I ever knew.
That old,
not the new,
and not the hard,
but the soft shoe.
Thank you, Carol. It was very, very sweet.
Carol Richards. That's another oops. Oops, Carol Richards, along with Dean Martin from Rat Pack.
Yep. What a way to close out a show, Dale. What a way to do it. Fantastic.
With the old soft shoe. Why not?
Why not? And we'll be back for lots more fun tomorrow night and every Friday and Saturday night, for as far as we can see, into the distant future with all these great old-timey radio shows.
Yeah, we got tons more. Soon there'll be another drive-in. Very soon. Woo-hoo! At the end of the month, it's going to be William Powell drive-in.
So we'll look forward to...
Thanks for stopping in tonight, folks. We'll see you tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Yeah, a little bit of that copy on there, but
got everything. Mine showed everything but the puff, so you're okay.
That's good. That's good.
Oh, hey, it's some pretty good shows tonight. Pretty good shows. Yep. Even The Shadow, that was a good one.
I saw somebody hosting Rocket Ship XM. Is that public domain? I think it is. I don't know.
The original one was Wade Wallace got a hold of it, did some kind of thing to it, and he copy wrote it. As long as you don't get a hold of his copy, there's one in the archive.org that is in public domain. It's not a Wade Wallace one.
Good. It's always fun for hosts to have more and more and more and more to choose from, especially in my favorite genres, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy.
Yes. And it seems like more and more people are finding foreign films to host. Gar does a lot of that as well. Gar hosts a lot of foreign, especially those Mexican cheap ones.
Yeah. I don't know why. I had a hard time gravitating to the foreign films. And from what I understand, too, the public domain status is a little suspect on some of them, especially from certain dates, I think.
It may be, yeah.
I think they changed some of the international laws with respect to public domain and some stuff that was no longer is. And I don't know. It's murky. It's a murky, murky topic.
Yeah, it truly is indeed. Until they tell you to stop, though, I guess. You know what bothers me, though? There are people that have put shows on, especially local channels and stuff, that have nothing to do with being public domain. Hey, yeah, you know what? I'd love to host the Night Strangler, too, but you know what? I'm not allowed. So you should anybody else be, unless they're paying for the right to host it, you know?
It would be nicer to have a level playing field, but certain people always have certain advantages. Whether they earned them or not, they got them, and it is what it is.
Well, it's not that they went and got any permission. They're just waiting for somebody to tell them to stop it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, until they get hit with a lawsuit or something and they have to pay money, more power to you. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to one guy who did some, he doesn't do it anymore, but he did do some movie hosting. And he did the Twonky and a couple things like that. And I said, you know, that's not public domain. He says, yeah, but it's really old. I said, but that doesn't make it public domain.
Yeah. King Kong is even older, okay?
It is. And it's not public domain.
That's right. So are all the Universals. Oh, man, to host those would be so – it'd be an honor, really, if I could ever host the Universals in some capacity.
Well, we'll have to move to Canada because in Canada, all those Universal ones are in public domain.
No, thanks. Not right now. Love you, Canada, but no.
Just like technically anything older than 50 years old from the UK is public domain here, even though it's not public domain there.
Strange. Very strange. Again, all these rules and the international aspect to them, it makes it
as you know, the rules are so confusing enough here in the U.S., let alone UK. I talked to a guy from the UK. He said technically – it doesn't fall into the public domain. A movie doesn't fall into public domain until like 75 years after the last person that was in it died.
I'm not sure if that's the exact rule. I know there's a 75-year aspect to it, but I don't know if it's the actors in it or from the original copyright date. I don't really know. I don't know. All I know is we're going to learn tomorrow the many names of death.
That's right. You know, there's another story. Could have been twin build with that. I think it was called, The Thousand Names of God. And it was from, what's that, the Canadian one, not the...
CBCS or
not,
something?
Not, or, not, yeah. Well, not Nightmare, but something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a series that they did, and The Thousand Names of God, I think, is what it was called. So the many faces, the many names of death and the thousand names of God would have been a nice pairing now that I think about it.
Yes. But that's okay. But, it worked out for our death weekend.
It did. Yep. Boy, there was enough death going on these shows. That's for sure. Especially that Shadow, man. He was killing people off right and left.
I couldn't be prouder.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Dave, I think I should get to some puppy and kitten wrangling.
Yeah, well, good luck, and glad to hear that Mighty Joe is starting to get braver as time goes along here.
A little bit. So, he's growing a little more courageous, poor little fella.
That or just getting tired of the basement, one or the other.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is. Got everything he needs, but he had... His domain has been invaded.
Yeah.
By that
hideous
creature.
Well, time for you to take your turn with the hideous creature there. So.
He's a cutie, but he has beady little eyes. Collies have tiny eyes. My gosh.
That's true. If they were human. I was just going to say, those beady little eyes, if they were human, they'd be politicians.
There you go. No, and collies are prone to eye issues. They have, because of the small eyes and everything, they have small tear ducts. So, like, when we first got him, we had to always wash his face, like, every day.
Wow.
But they kind of grow out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because they have a whole different shaped face, a long, skinny snoot, and them beady little eyes.
Gotta be careful of that. You never.
But I've never, and I've seen a lot of dogs in my day, you know, especially when I was a kid running around the various neighborhoods. I've never known a mean collie. They're all like people oriented. They like people, and they like, you know, they like being part of the gang.
But they are also very protective. So if they feel threatened or their family is threatened, they will attack.
They might. I think there are other dogs that are better for defense than a collie, because they might just say, "Oh, another new friend, yay!" When somebody breaks in.
Well,
any dog can be had for like a hamburger or something too.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
If you're gonna burgle, you we're all walk around with some you know, ground meat or something for the dog. Here, boy.
Oh, good. Now we're giving burglarizing tips. Thank you so much.
Well,
I feel so proud to be part of the show.
Might as well. Then we can be blamed for the rising crime rates. You know, hey, there we go. Let's pick on Erie House now.
There you go. Next week, it's extortion.
Yes. Extortion 101, right here.
Oh, my. Before we get in any more trouble, I think we should bring in the one, the only, Mr. Jimmy Durante. Ha, ha, ta, ta, ta.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's
mortifying.
Good night. It's time to say good night.
You've got a million of them.
Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And remember, Mrs. Calabash, don't tell Mr. Calabash about that. Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
Ooh.